Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
You're listening to the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway. This edition is published in the early hours of Wednesday, the 1st of March. There's growing anger and frustration in Nigeria amid claims the recent presidential election was rigged. The US Supreme Court is hearing a challenge to President Biden's plan to forgive some student debt. And we hear about the smart suit that's transforming disabled children's lives. Also in the podcast, fears of a famine in North Korea and...
This elephant can flap its ears, lift its trunk to give blessings, even the pupils and the eyelid flashes. It wags its tail.
Why an Indian temple has swapped a real elephant for a fake one. But first, was the Nigerian election rigged, or are the complaints from opposition parties an attempt to overturn a result they don't like? Those are the conflicting arguments in Africa's most populous nation following Saturday's poll, which was marred by technical problems. According to the latest results tally, Bola Tinubu of the governing All Progressives Congress has a strong lead. But the opposition parties are crying foul and calling for a fresh election. Here's Labour Party Chairman Julius Abure.
This election is not free, fair and credible. It's clear to all Nigerians that this election is already compromised, and therefore, if that is the wishes and aspirations of every Nigerian and is the general opinion, the best thing to do is for us to correct it and get it right.
Well, the Electoral Commission said the poll was free, fair and credible and has called on parties to take any complaints to court. But these Nigerians expressed their anger and frustration with the electoral process.
That's what I'm saying. It's close to depressing. People are crying that even when we came out to vote, to participate in this election with everything that makes us, and then eventually you go back and then you manipulate and you want to do whatever you want to do, then what are you telling us? You put in the person you want to put. The next 4 years, the next 8 years, you think we'll come out again?
Sad. I'm angry. I'm pained. I'm just sad because it's not fair, actually. This has been going on for all the elections since while growing up. Always rigging, always changing results. For once in our life, there should be a change in this country that lets another person win or another person take it.
Well, earlier I got an update from one of our correspondents in Nigeria, Chris Iwoko.
Got just over 20 states out of the 36 states now counted, and the governing party is leading with some good margin. Basically, I'm here in Oka in Anambra State, and this is the base of the Labour Party candidate Peter Obi. Everybody here is waiting with bated breath to see if a miracle could happen. But as it seems, the issue of irregularities that the opposition parties have been crying about appear to be dominating discussions, not just here in Oka, but across the southeast of Nigeria. Remember, the southeast is the region where the separatist group, the Indigenous People of Biafra, are active. And before the election, there had been a call by one of their members to ask people to stay back and not go to vote. However, the turnout in some parts of this southeast region, many say, has been large. And there hadn't been much incident as had been expected because of activities of armed men who had attacked public facilities, including INEC facilities and police stations.
Chris, just remind us, though, of the problems that were seen on polling day, the technical problems. And do the opposition parties have a point when they say there were problems and it needs to be rerun?
Yeah, during the election proper, there were things that motivated a lot of people to come out to vote. And one of it is that as soon as voting has taken place, the results of each polling unit will be announced and then uploaded to the server of the Electoral Commission. Unfortunately, this didn't happen. And people now feel that because it didn't happen and people could not view the result as had been announced over time, then it means that the election has been compromised. And not only that, there were areas where violence were reported, voter intimidation, ballot backlashing, as well as destruction of voting materials. There were also areas where voting didn't take place and people feel that they were disenfranchised. These are some of the issues that have made the opposition parties to now say, well, we didn't believe vote counting should really go on because the system has been compromised.
And that was Chris Awokor in Awka in southeastern Nigeria. Americans owe an estimated $1.75 trillion on their student loans. In August, shortly before the midterm elections, President Biden announced a plan to cancel some $430 billion of that student debt. Republicans cried foul, accusing him of overreaching his authority and mounted a legal challenge. On Tuesday, the case started to be heard by the US Supreme Court, which has taken a more activist role since Donald Trump cemented its conservative majority. Our Washington correspondent, Nomia Iqbal, told me first how important the policy is for President Biden.
It was one of his key campaign promises to younger people that he would forgive student debt. And so if it's struck down, not only has he gone back on that promise in the eyes of a lot of young people, and certainly the ones that I spoke to outside the Supreme Court last night, but also it sets this precedent where if the Supreme Court decides that actually states that don't like any federal initiatives can challenge it, then they could do that for any federal initiative that President Biden has. Ultimately, the question that justices are being asked is forgiving student loans in the name of the pandemic an abuse of presidential power? So Donald Trump's administration invoked an act back in March 2020 to pause student loan repayment requirements because of the pandemic. Biden did the same. It cost a lot of money. And now Biden is saying we're going to end the repayment pause, but we're going to forgive the debt that you have accumulated depending on how much you earn, and especially for those people on grants for low-income families. So that is what's at the heart of the case. You've got Republican-led states challenging it. You've got two student loan borrowers challenging it, saying, well, this unfairly excludes us. We won't get a ruling, though, however, until the summer.
And you actually spoke to one of the congressmen campaigning outside the court.
That's right, Maxwell Frost. He is seen as one of the sort of the first Gen Z congressman, young guy. He makes a big point of talking about how he is in debt, that he couldn't even afford an apartment in DC. So he came out last night where lots of students had gathered to camp overnight in the rain and in the cold to really rally them and support what they're doing.
We need to ensure that our people don't have this crushing student debt so that way they can thrive. He's on track to be the generation that owns the least amount of wealth than any other generation in this country.
And you know what it's like.
And I know what it's like too. People know me for being Gen Z, but also being able to not afford an apartment here in DC. And so this is part of this greater struggle to ensure that people have the resources they need to have true freedom in this country.
As I say, for students, this is a big issue. It's important to understand that student debt in this country follows you right into your old age. So a lot of them were telling me that if they have student debt, and some of them are 19 years old, they've already got debt of about $10,000, they won't be able to get a mortgage. It will affect getting a car. It just affects their credit score. That is why they are so passionate about the justices upholding it. But the Supreme Court, as you mentioned, there's a conservative majority. So at the moment, listening to the arguments, it does look like it might fall on partisan lines, but we won't find out, as I say, for another few months.
Nomia Iqbal in Washington. Well, staying in the US, New York City is putting pressure on the federal government in Washington to help it deal with an influx of migrants. The arrivals, some 45,000 since early last year, have overwhelmed the city's homeless shelter system and led the mayor to declare a state of emergency. The BBC's Neda Taufik reports.
This view is similar to the one seen by many thousands of immigrants as they...
The Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor has stood as an emblem of America's proud embrace of immigrants. But the recent influx of migrants has created a state of emergency. In the last 10 months, more than 45,000 migrants have arrived, largely bused here to the Port Authority Terminal by conservative leaders from border states like Texas. It's led New York's mayor to declare this a man-made humanitarian crisis. But ultimately, Eric Adams, himself a Democrat, has placed the blame on the federal government and President Biden.
The federal government should step in and say, let's coordinate this, because if we all take a portion, it won't overwhelm a city.
By law, New York must provide shelter to anyone who needs it. But the system is buckling under the strain.
Everything is just cleaned and prepped and painted and ready for a new family to come in.
Henry Love is the vice president of WIN, one of the city's shelters.
This is our site here has mostly moms with one child. So that's why you see the bed and usually one cradle.
Henry says migrants coming in don't have work authorization or access to federal benefits like food stamps or Medicare. Shelters simply don't have the resources or space needed to keep up with the flows of those arriving.
There's lots of people who are coming into our system who are fleeing climate-related disasters, economic and political violence, social violence. Our system wasn't set up to deal with this population. The fact that our immigration system is so convoluted, I speak English and I'm pretty educated, and it is baffling to me, let alone someone who's in crisis mode, doesn't speak the language, is in a city, you know, without supports. To have to navigate that, I can't even fathom. We're going to keep screaming and asking for the federal government to step up and really, you know, do immigration reform. What does it look like in a year? What does it look like in 5 years? If these flows through the hemisphere continue to happen and we continue to kick it down the road and don't address some of these root causes.
In the shelter's multi-purpose room, toys and art supplies help liven the space. ME often comes down here with her infant and her toddler son who enjoys coloring. She is an asylum seeker who wants to remain anonymous. She says she fled Venezuela at 4 months pregnant in search of a better life for her children, even though she knew the journey would be dangerous.
Sometimes we didn't have access to any food. We would beg for food, but people had barely enough for themselves. We crossed through jungles. It was horrible.
ME hopes one day she can work and bring over her remaining daughter in Venezuela. Others like her are just as motivated to come to the United States.
Neda Taufik in New York. Many temples in India, particularly in the state of Kerala, use elephants for religious processions and ceremonies. Animal rights activists say it's cruel because the creatures are often chained and surrounded by noisy crowds. Now, one temple is trying an alternative, thanks to the animal rights group PETA India, as the group's Kushbu Gupta told Razia Iqbal.
PETA India has donated this mechanical robotic elephant. His name is Anyanapalli Raman. This is after the temple pledged that they will never keep or hire live elephants or any other animals for processions or any other purposes. We followed all traditional ceremonies that one would do if a live elephant was donated to a temple. And with this Nadariyuthal ceremony, that's in Malayalam, which is offering a live elephant to the god, the deity of the temple, mechanical elephant in Yanapalli Raman is finally dedicated to the temple.
Does the mechanical elephant look like an elephant?
Absolutely. This elephant can flap its ears, lift its trunk to give blessings, even the pupils and the eyelid flashes. It wags its tail. We have so many devotees and visitors at the temple during the ceremony before and after that, and they're still coming in.
Does the mechanical elephant squirt water?
Absolutely, it does.
Tell us what kinds of conditions the live elephants were kept in, which is why you were campaigning to have them replaced.
So we believe that the best form of worship of elephants, who are also representatives of Lord Ganesha, is to allow them live free, as God intended, with their families in nature. When they're in captivity, used for not just in temple festivals, but for rides, for film shoots, weddings, they're stolen from their jungle homes and denied everything that's natural and important to them. They're kept chained, forced to obey commands through beatings and weapons. Sometimes, you know, they continuously bob their head or sway their trunks in the air, which are signs of psychological distress. Unsurprisingly, many lash out in frustration, injuring and even killing nearby humans.
So how often does that happen? Because you're saying that elephants kind of make themselves pull away from those concrete posts that they're attached to and go on the rampage against humans?
Yeah, so when in festivals, the elephants are not tethered, but they are controlled with sharp weapons like ankush. There is a chain which goes around their entire stomach. And then, you know, they're kept hungry and thirsty sometimes to control them through hunger and thirst. So when they're in festival, they're lined up amidst crowd. They're decorated. There are people on top. There is loud music, the noise of the timpani. And there is heat. Kerala is a humid environment. There is heat. And then they just lash out and they confused and they just try to escape. And these upset and frustrated elephants have killed more than 500 people in the span of 15 years.
Kushbu Gupta of PETA India talking to Razia Iqbal. 15-year-old Eli Crossley is a budding musician currently studying for his end-of-year exams. He has muscular dystrophy and uses a wheelchair. But his mum has helped develop a prototype supersuit which could transform his life and help others. Frances Reid reports.
Eli Crossley loves music, whether it's writing it or performing on his ukulele. He also has Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which means his limbs will eventually weaken. Last year, he stopped walking, but his mother has helped develop a suit that she hopes will allow him to continue his passion. The technology involved assists Eli by providing support for his arms. Eli says the prototype has worked well.
I feel like it's very comfortable and I hope it will help me in fulfilling my dream to hopefully one day play at Glastonbury with my band.
Together with a company in the US, the family have been developing the suit for the last 4 years and are hoping to make 10 more prototypes to test its development. Eli's mother, Emily Rubin, says she designed the technology so that teenagers would want to use it.
What we want to do is develop a suit that's going to be attractive and desirable for disabled people, because too often the products that they get sold are just not designed with desirability in mind. So we want this to be a really functional suit that will help with, you know, being able to brush your teeth or give your mum a hug, all the little things that are actually the really big thing.
She's aiming to make the prototype more sophisticated, and the family's hope is that it won't just help people with muscular dystrophy.
Obviously, I think it's the first step towards something amazing, and I think it won't just stop here. I feel like this could lead to many more designs, not just helping people with my condition, but people with spinal injuries, war veterans, and all these people who deserve to be helped.
They're planning to get their design on the market in the next 3 years, giving the organisers of Glastonbury plenty of notice to reserve the pyramid stage for Eli's band.
That report by Frances Reid. Still to come on the Global News podcast.
I really didn't think that I would see them ever in Suffolk.
Pinks, greens, purples, lifetime first for me. Absolutely amazing.
A rare treat as the Aurora Borealis lights up the night sky in the UK. North Korea appears to be facing serious food shortages, according to the monitoring group 38 North. It believes the shortages are the worst since the 1990s famine that killed hundreds of thousands. Martin Williams is from 38 North. He told Evan Davis more about what's going on.
Government itself doesn't release a lot of figures, but the World Food Programme has been in, and they estimate that around 40% of the population, over 10 million people, are undernourished and require humanitarian assistance. So it's an ongoing problem.
But this year, it does seem to be very much more serious than usual.
Everything was, you know, looking okay until a few weeks ago when the North Koreans announced that they were going to have a large political meeting, a plenary meeting of the Workers' Party, which is the party that runs the country. These meetings don't happen very often, but the last one was only 2 months ago, so it's quite unusual for them to have one so fast, and pretty quickly said that the theme of this meeting was going to be agriculture. And that meeting, in fact, started a couple of days ago.
And the agriculture, it's essentially collective agriculture. That's the way it's run in North Korea, as you'd expect, presumably.
Yeah, collective agriculture, a lot of the things that are grown will go into a central distribution system. So farmers don't get to keep a lot of the crops that they grow themselves. But that system itself has also been falling down over the last few years. Bribery has become more rampant as the systems have fallen down, and the food distribution system is a complete mess in the country, which also exacerbates the problems that they're having due to things like poor weather, lack of good fertilizers, and even farming equipment. A lot of North Korean farming is still done with hand carts or with oxes and things like that, not even tractors. The North Korean agricultural sector faces so many problems.
What are people actually eating? What does an evening meal in North Korea for a typical citizen consist of? Presumably they're not eating meat every night. I mean, not remotely.
Rice is one of the staples, but also, you know, other vegetables. Meat is something that, and fruit as well, is something that's very rare. And as you get into the countryside as well, you know, an evening meal might be something you have, but lunch might be something you don't have, because people aren't necessarily even eating three meals a day. I mentioned earlier the World Food Programme statistics. They have particularly said this is a problem for young children, pregnant women, and breastfeeding mothers. Something like one in five children in North Korea is starving. stunted, which gives you an idea of the sort of scale of this problem.
It's extraordinary, though, it's launching ballistic missiles and has nuclear weapons. I mean, it's just sort of extraordinary contrast.
Yeah, exactly. That's where a lot of the state's money, a lot of the state's attention goes, is in developing nuclear weapons. This year, they've also said they're going to launch satellites. And that's one of the things that the North Korean people suffer from. It's the people that are the ones that suffer.
Martin Williams talking to Evan Davis. Police in Israel say that all Israeli suspects detained over rioting against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank on Sunday night have been released. Our Middle East analyst Sebastian Usher reports.
Hundreds of Jewish settlers descended on the Palestinian town of Hawara on Sunday after the killing of two Israeli brothers in the town. For hours, they went on a rampage, setting fire to houses and cars. One Palestinian man was killed, while a number of others were injured. Eight suspects are known to have been detained. They've now been released, though Israeli police say that three remain under house arrest. The head of the Israeli army has vowed to investigate what he called the lawlessness of the incident, even as several far-right members of the new Israeli government have defended the settlers' action. In Gaza, Hamas has described the settlers' violence as a declaration of war.
Sebastian Usher. France is one of the powerhouses of world football, with stars like Kylian Mbappe lighting up the recent Men's World Cup and club side Lyon dominating the women's game in Europe. But behind the scenes, French football has been dogged by controversy and recrimination. And on Tuesday, the president of the Football Federation, Noël Le Graët, resigned. The coach of the women's team has also been on resignation watch, but she remains in place for now. I heard more from our sports news correspondent, Alex Capstick.
The man in charge of the federation since 2011, Noël Le Graët, has been under fire for a string of what have been described as sexual and moral harassment allegations. He's actually been suspended since January, pending the outcome of an audit into his behaviour, which has been carried out by the French Sports Ministry. Now, just under 2 weeks ago, it gave a damning verdict on Le Graët, saying he had lost the necessary legitimacy to carry out his role at the head of French football, and it highlighted his attitude towards women. So this decision, it was widely expected following a crisis meeting of the federation's executive committee. He was first accused by a female sports agent of improper conduct. She said he repeatedly propositioned her during a period spanning 2013 to 2017, and there were other reports of complaints from several female employees at the Football Federation. Mr. Le Graët, we should say, has always denied doing anything wrong. He was also deeply unpopular across France for comments he made about the former national team captain, Zinedine Zidane. That was in a radio interview shortly after the World Cup final in Qatar, and he appeared to question Zidane's ability as a manager. He said he wouldn't have him in charge of France, although he did later issue an apology.
On the sporting front, he's had a pretty successful run as boss. What's the impact of his departure likely to be?
He's been in charge of the federation during a highly successful period for the French national team, Euro 2016 runners-up, World Cup winners in Russia in 2018, and of course runners-up to Argentina in Qatar a few months ago. The women's team has risen to number 5 in the world rankings. What happens next? No permanent replacement is going to be announced yet. And Noël Le Graët may not be stepping away from football or the politics of football. Anyway, he's very close to FIFA president Gianni Infantino. He was a vocal supporter of FIFA's decision at the World Cup not to allow team captains to wear the One Love rainbow-coloured armband. He's serving on FIFA's ruling council, and he's running for another 4-year stint on that committee. He's also in line to head up FIFA's new office in Paris, and that has caused a bit of a stir. Lots of criticism aimed at FIFA over that decision.
Alex Capstick, our sports news correspondent. A woman has been jailed for 7 years here in Britain for pretending to be a qualified psychiatrist. Zolia Alemi used a fake degree certificate to get jobs across the National Health Service and in private firms. The court in the city of Manchester was told she'd earned more than $1.2 million during her fraudulent career. Passing sentence, the judge said Alemi had moved around the country to avoid detection and criticised the General Medical Council for a lack of scrutiny. The details from Nick Garnett.
Alemi started a medical degree in New Zealand, but never bothered finishing it. However, that didn't stop her coming to Britain and pretending to be a psychiatrist treating a large number of vulnerable patients during her career. She was able to register with the General Medical Council using a fake degree certificate and a reference from an employer in Pakistan. Manchester Crown Court heard Alemi had been convicted 5 years ago of forging the will of an elderly woman in her care. At the time, her employers still thought she was medically certified, but a newspaper reporter rang the university in New Zealand to carry out a background check, which revealed she'd never qualified. The police were called in. Detective Superintendent Matt Scott of Cumbria Police thinks Alamy was able to carry on practising for so many years that she began to believe her own deception.
I think it casts a shadow over all of the decent, qualified, good doctors and medics throughout the UK. I just think that this woman has sold a lie and has lived that lie, and I think potentially, in my opinion, has believed that lie herself at some point.
The case raises questions over the monitoring of qualifications by the General Medical Council. The judge, Hilary Manley, described Alamy's GMC registration as an abject failure of scrutiny and called on the medical registration body to carry out a thorough, open and transparent inquiry. The GMC says since the case came to light, it has checked the qualifications of more than 3,000 doctors who registered using the same method as Alamy and found everyone else was properly qualified.
Nick Garnett. The Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, have been putting on a magnificent display across parts of Europe and North America over the past few days. But few people really expected such a dazzling spectacle would be visible in the UK. These people in eastern England were lucky enough to witness it.
My name is Spencer. I decided to walk up the lane around about 9 p.m. to see if I could see the Northern Lights, save myself a trip to Iceland. Wasn't expecting to see much, but was absolutely amazed to see a wonderful glowing red, an experience that I didn't ever expect to see right on my doorstep.
My name's Tracy. I just knew I had to go out and try. Absolutely amazing. I really didn't think that I would see them ever in Suffolk.
My name is Steve Aylward. Thought it would be a long shot to see the Northern Lights this evening, but gave it a go anyway. Just amazing colours, pinks, greens, purples. Lifetime first for me, absolutely amazing.
As Wendy Urquhart reports, spectators benefited from clear skies across Northern Europe.
It's a phenomenon that never fails to impress, and some people travel hundreds of miles just to see the Northern Lights. The drama usually unfolds slowly, with flashes of neon colour here and there in the sky, but when they start dancing, they really are something else. In West Sligo, in the northwest of Ireland, neon green, red and purple have been floating across the sky. Lime green, bright red and purple are typical of the Northern Lights seen in Denmark. And in the Netherlands, neon pink has been the dominant colour, with shades of green peeping through on the horizon. The Northern Lights have been seen as far south as Oxfordshire in the UK, and some people were lucky enough to see shooting stars at the very same time. The Aurora Borealis is caused by solar storms on the surface of the sun, which send out electrically charged particles. Most of these particles are deflected away, but some collide with nitrogen and oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere. And when those molecules recover from the collisions, they release small bursts of energy in the form of light, which is the spectacular light show that we know as the Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights. In the last few days, the Aurora Borealis has delighted hundreds of people who've uploaded photos and videos to social media platforms so that the rest of us can enjoy their beauty too.
Wendy Urquhart. And that is all from us for now, but the Global News podcast will be back very soon. This edition was mixed by Caroline Driscoll and produced by Emma Joseph. Our editor is Karen Martin. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.